So, hello. It's really great to be here at the Soil Science Society of America meetings. And it's actually great to follow the PineMap presentation because PineMap actually inspired the work that we're going to talk about today. So I'm going to be talking about the Northern Forest Drought Net, which is a relatively new framework to understand impacts of precip change on northern forest ecosystems. And I'd like to start by acknowledging my co-authors, Heidi Asper-Jornsen, Pam Templer, Katie Jennings, Andrew Reinman, Mary Martin, Matt Vadebunker, and Melinda Smith. And as you'll see on the acknowledgments at the back, a whole cast of other folks. So what I want to do today is talk a little bit bigger picture than the last talk on precipitation change in general, why we care, talk about forest precipitation manipulation experiments, the ones that are out there now, and then introduce you to the Northern Forest Drought Net initiative. And so I always like to start to make sure that we're all on the same page, and this is an easy group because I'm sure everybody can agree that it's unequivocal that atmospheric CO2 has been going up over the last 100 years. And as goes atmospheric CO2 and other greenhouse gases, of course, so goes temperature. So we've seen an increase in temperature, particularly over the last 30 to 40 years. And like the pot on the stove, if you increase temperature, we're going to increase or intensify the hydrologic cycle. And so indeed, we have seen an increase in global precipitation by about 2 to 6%. And that is unlike temperature and CO2, it's not evenly distributed around the globe, so we see general reduction in precipitation from 0 to about 30 degrees latitude and an increase in precipitation at northern latitudes. And we're also seeing, and now can say with fair certainty, that we're seeing an increase in the frequency and the severity of both floods and droughts. So all of that's just to say we know that our precipitation, our moisture regimes are changing. So why do we care? I could go on for the rest of my talk about why we care, but one thing here is we know that water is a driver of both photosynthesis and respiration. And carbon balance, or AKA productivity, is a balance between photosynthesis and respiration. And we have fairly good evidence that as precipitation, as moisture regimes go up, productivity goes up, and then the reverse is things dry down, productivity goes down. But we don't really have a really good mechanistic understanding, particularly for forests, of how this works. This is a cartoon I put together a couple of years ago. I kind of started down here in the acid rain days, and this kind of shows the breadth of our knowledge about these different drivers of global change. And precipitation, we really just started doing precip manipulation experiments maybe the 2000s. So our base of knowledge, our breadth of knowledge is not as broad as for some of these other drivers. There is a growing number, as we just heard, of precipitation change experiments. And there have been a couple of syntheses of these, meta-analyses of these. One was Wu that came out in 2010, and another is one that we've been working on, a precipitation change meta-analysis. And so for this study, we were able to gather information from 156 studies, experiments at 52 sites distributed across the globe, although you can see most of them are in North America and Europe. But note that only 9% of these are in forests. Okay, with PineMap, that number has gone up since we started. We're very excited about that. But this means that it's hard to talk about the response of forests to precipitation change. So, for example, this is a classic meta-analysis diagram, and this is the response of above-ground productivity to a decline in moisture. And our grand mean shows that there's a significant decline in productivity, about 20%, across 119 sites. And you can see that grasslands show a nice decline, shrublands show a nice decline. And here are poor orphan forests out here. When we did this analysis, there were only 6 studies that measured above-ground productivity. So because of the lack of studies, and really the lack of consistency in design of studies, there are conflicting results about the resilience of forest ecosystems to changes in precipitation. So for example, there are some studies that show that forests are more resilient than grasslands to changes in precipitation, perhaps to their due to their deep-rooted nature or storage of carbohydrates. On the other hand, there are also studies that show that forests are more susceptible to drought than, say, grasslands, because they're not as adapted to drought. And then there's a number of studies that say convergence. There's no real difference. So the bottom line that we were thinking about is there's really not enough studies. So why is that? We all know why that is, right? It's hard to put a roof over forests, right? It costs a lot of money. So we decided to, again, after talking and seeing some of the presentations here at the Soil Science Society of America meetings a couple of years ago when Tom was just getting started on this, we decided to set out and see if we could design a lower cost forest precip manipulation experiment. And so we got funding for the Northern Forest Drought Net. Northern Forest, because it's a system that we work in. Northern Forest covers 11 million plus hectares in the northeastern U.S., more in Canada, more in the Midwest. The projections for this area are drier forests in a wetter world. Okay, so we expect a 10 to 14% increase in precipitation by 2100, but more of this precipitation coming in large events. We've been seeing this, right, in the last couple of years, large events separated by longer periods of drought. So we suspect our forests are going to be subjected to more drought. These forests are adapted to year-round mesic conditions. They are not adapted to drought. So we suspect, we hypothesize, drought stress is going to be high. But what does drought stress look like? So Northern Forest Drought Net, we have four objectives. The first is to establish a network. Get those people in the Northeast together who are interested. Get us talking together. The second is, based on this, develop a standard methodology for conducting forest through-fall displacement experiments. And that's what I'm going to call them from now on, TDEs, through-fall displacement experiments. And in collaboration with the IDERCN, which is the International Drought Net Research Coordination Network, which is a large-scale network of primarily grassland precip manipulation experiments. We want to be the forest end of this. Implement the TDE prototype, okay, we design it, let's put one up, see what it looks like, and then use all of this to develop a cross-site network of TDE experiments in the Northeast, but hopefully compatible with what's going on in the Southeast and elsewhere. So to create a network, some of the work that we've done, we identified the research community. Russ was part of that, Ivan was part of that, a couple other folks maybe in the room or certainly in our division. We jointly reviewed literature and the existing forest TDE designs. We discussed obstacles and solutions for conducting forest TDEs, and we used this information to design the Hubbard Brook prototype. And we did this by kind of combined, I call them hybrid webinars, where about half the people were in the room and half the people were on a really good quality webinar program. So I think it worked pretty well. The second is to develop the standard methodology. So here we had another meeting, and so here not only the folks from our region, but we invited people from all over the country and really all over the world to come to Hubbard Brook, those people who had actually done forest TDE, through-fall displacement experiments, tell us about their experience and what they would have done differently and how they would help us design this new network. So some of the things we talk about, and this is my my prop up here. We actually have kind of a standard methods protocol. It's draft, but you're welcome to take a copy. We've talked about, first and foremost, affordable, okay? It needs to be passive. You need to put it together with local crews, with local construction materials, and we want it to cost less than $5,000 per plot in materials. We want it to be compatible with the international drought experiment. So we wanted to be able to put our plots, our experiments on this map. They now have about 100 small grassland studies around the world. If you're familiar with NutNets, it's kind of a grassroots way to get people using low-cost infrastructure to set up experiments around the world. So we want to be the forest component of this, or part of the forest component of this. For treatments, we were recommending, again, for this network, passive, constant removal, year-round, targeting the first percentile of your long-term record, and a duration of 3 to 4 years. So simply put, we would like to apply once-in-a-century drought for up to 4 years. This is an example. John Campbell put this together, about 30 studies. The closed circles are the ambient precip regimes, and the open circles are the experimental dryness index. So these are existing experiments. And just to show you, this 1% metric would push these experiments more. One of the things that we found, boy, there's not a lot of response force to drought experiments, and part of it, we feel, is these systems have not been pushed far enough. So this just shows you that this would push these systems farther. Site selection, in this we talk about, for all those people who want to start up a precip manipulation experiment, we talk about landscape position, obviously flat, the top of a ridge. Big is good, bigger is better. We want to think about having 3 to 7 root system. The root systems of 3 to 7 dominant trees in your plots. A rule of thumb is root spread 2 times the canopy height. Know your system. Every system is a little bit different, but you need to make these plots big enough. Replication versus pseudo-replication, pick your poison. We are coming down in replication. It's easier in the review process later on, unless you're a watershed study. Trenching, trying to isolate your plots hydrologically. It depends on the lateral flow in your plots. You trade off isolating your plots hydrologically, but disturbing the roots in the plots. And snow removal. A lot of us work, obviously, in the north. Snow is a big part of our hydrologic year, and we do recommend that you remove snow in these plots. In terms of measurements, anybody who's done a synthesis or a meta-analysis knows how frustrating it is to go through all these wonderful studies and you don't have the data that you need, so you spend hours and hours and hours and days and days and days getting the data. And so we give a menu. You have what we call level 1 and level 2 measurements. Level 1 is if you can be a part of our network, you really need to measure these things. It will make our analysis and our synthesis easier later on. And then level 2 measurements will give a kind of menu and links to common protocols. So again, for people who are starting out experiments, if you want to be part of the network, you really need to report on some of these things about the site, and you need to do some basic plot level measurements. So objective 3, our prototype study. We started this in August of 2014. That was after that series of hybrid webinars that we did. It's at Hubbard Brook Experimental Forest. This is in central New Hampshire. If you haven't been there, you're welcome to come visit us. This is an aerial view of one of our 2 plots. The study goals were prototype, again, for this cross-site study. We wanted to participate in the international drought experiment. And we're trying to fit in as an additional factor for another climate change across season study that was already or was already about to start manipulating temperature and frost cycle. So we now have temperature, frost cycle, and drought all in one experiment. Our prototype design is we have for our treatments 2 15 by 15 meter plots. Our 1% turns out to be at a 49.25, rounded up to 50% exclusion. The troughs are actually 15 inches English, because it's easier to build in English units, but it's 38 centimeter troughs, 38 centimeters in between. 2 meters tall, so you can get under them. That's actually a factor you really need to think about, so you can move around. Materials are low cost, local building supplies, and then we took advice from the Pine Map and are using that same reinforced polyethylene sheeting that they use there. For us, it cost about $6,000 per plot, or $27 per meter squared, if you want to make your plots bigger or smaller. We collected pre-treatment data in 2014, and we initiated the treatments in May of 2015. These are just our measurements, and it's a combination of that level 1, level 2 that I mentioned before. This is clearly not a data-rich talk, but I felt I had to include some data slides in this. And this first one is full disclosure. Okay, so when I come back and I talk about this another year or two. So this is soil moisture. We have automated soil moisture every hour out there. The blue line is the reference. The red is the drought. You can see that our reference was a lot drier than our drought. Darn it. So we started the treatment here, and we're actually narrowing that gap. So we are drying out the treatment plots, but we're kind of coming down to the level of the reference plots. 15 was a drier year than 14, but you can see we dried out the drought plots more than the reference plots. So we're going in the right direction. We also recognized, and this is kind of important, that we had those 15-inch by 15-inch troughs, and there were gaps, and we just assumed, right, we didn't talk to soil physicists, but we just assumed that the water would kind of disperse between that. Oh no, that is not true. We have definite stripes in here, and we had a wonderful RET who came out and spent lots of time measuring soil moisture in these plots, and you can see we have hot spots. The G is in gaps, T is under troughs, and if you put this together, this is our control plots, actually two of them together. You can see these are our drought plots, but there's clearly no significant difference between the drought and the control. But here's the same data separated by gaps, right? That's about the same as the reference, and here's the trough, gap, trough, reference. So we really have to think about where our samplers are, and kind of thinking about our design, maybe you shouldn't have 15-inch gap troughs, and I'll be interested to talk to the pine map folks about that. Soil respiration, just another teaser. We all know that it's very sensitive to moisture. This just shows, again, the drought here in blue in this case. Very saturated soils in the beginning. We do dry them out a little bit over the growing season. Temperature drops, saturated again. So we're beginning to have a split on these. So we are doing a year-round treatment. We do hope to continue to dry out the drought plots. We're going to be looking at the gaps and the troughs. Looking forward, we have a paper that we hope to submit very soon, which is summarizing kind of these challenges that we've talked about over the series of meetings. The protocol that I have in this hand is going online in the International Drought Experiment, hopefully by the end of this week. The prototype experiment will continue for another 2 or 3 years, and we hope to start bringing our network together to talk about a cross-site proposal. So. Let's see, that's not what I want. I want this one. I want to acknowledge a lot of folks who have participated in this funding, Northern States Research Cooperative. And absolutely, if you would like to participate or do some work on these plots, we'd love to hear from you. So thank you.